You ready?
You need to start referring to yourself in the third person, too.
I really should.
And just as the Wadman.
Yeah.
What are you doing? Oh, man, the Wadman's got to shoot this afternoon. It's going to be off the chain.
The Wadman requires 2 cans of Coca-Cola. 3 buckets of jelly beans.
Where are the Wadman's brawn color strobes? Check the Wattopedia.
It's funny because there actually is the Wattopedia.
I know.
Oh, that's awesome.
Hey, gang. Welcome to episode 59 of On Taking Pictures. You ready, Bill?
Always ready.
All right. We are a weekly podcast. We're talking about the art and science of making images. And like I said, this is episode 59. We're getting up there. My name is Jeffrey Sidoris from fadedandblurred.com. And with me, fancy photographer, fancy busy photographer. You've been working this week, Bill Wadman. What's going on?
Yeah, working yesterday, working today, working tomorrow. Hey, I like the way you call us a gang. Pete Conrad, one of the commander of Apollo 12, used to say gang a lot, and I like that. Or I like the idea that there's a bunch of people across the country that are like the On Taking Pictures gang, and they take out their cameras and they go rumble at night.
Yeah, you know? A posse.
Yeah.
The On Taking Pictures posse.
We call each other SA.
Is that what we do?
I don't know. You don't like that?
We all wear white tag tops and stuff. I don't know. Is that what they do? Flannel shirts, only buttoned at the top?
I always wanted to try that look. I think I'm a little too, well, white to pull that off, honestly.
But you've got the look. You've got a vibe. You've got those like ultra dark indigo jeans that you roll up. Right?
I do the gray rigid jeans a lot. Yeah, I like that. Although it's getting summertime, so it's harder to wear that kind of stuff, especially when
you transfer to like khakis or something.
Yeah, you know what I tend to do is I wear not Carhartt pants, but wait, these aren't Carhartt, are they? No, some other brand. No, actually, they are Carhartt pants, where they're like, you know, sort of like painter's pants kind of thing.
Ah, okay.
They're thin, but they're still pants, and they're cheap, and they wear forever. You know. Anyway, so yeah, it's very exciting. Hey, you know, I'm wearing a t-shirt right now. I'm wearing a Shut Up and Shoot t-shirt.
Really?
Yeah. Which, for those of you who don't know, is sort of an old school Faded and Blurred thing from a couple of years ago.
We still have some, actually.
You still have some?
Oh, yeah. I've still got a bunch of them in my closet.
All right. We should sell you some shirts. How much do you charge for these shirts?
I don't know. You know what? We'd give them away with a bowl of soup at this point.
It's got a it's got like a little camera on it. It just says Shut Up and Shoot. I like
it.
Yeah. Where are those? Those are on Faded and Blurred somewhere?
I don't even think they're up anymore.
Well, I think you should put them up because I think people would buy them.
We could, you know what? We should blow them out at like $5 plus shipping or something.
Yeah.
And when they're gone, they're gone.
Yeah, you should.
All right.
All right. We'll do that. Put a note down.
All right.
And then another little plug for you. I know that one wasn't planned, but, you putting up your new book?
It will go up this week. Yeah, we have just finished the update to our book about ice cream, which is called Chill. And we're going to do some little behind the scenes things of how we shot it, because we really did shoot this thing on kind of a shoestring in terms of gear.
Yeah, but so it doesn't look like it.
No, it does, and that's the thing. It looks gorgeous, and thank you for saying that. But you know, a couple speed lights and a couple of 22-inch easy boxes, and that's it. And
window a very light. Large light source from 93 million miles away.
That's right. That's right.
The best light source of all.
Yeah, it was really fun. I think people are going to like it. I hope if you like ice cream, you will. So it was fun. It was fun to do. We got to do some new flavors that we had been thinking about for a while that we didn't get to include last time. So this one is over 30 flavors now.
Wow.
Almost 100 pages. Yeah, so it's good.
So if you like making ice cream, this is the book for you.
Yes.
Still got to figure out a way for you guys to send me some of the stuff you've tested.
You know, it's funny. We made probably 60-something flavors.
Oh, God. You can't eat it all.
And no. You end up either giving it away or throwing it away. And some of them didn't make the cut. You know, we didn't like them, but you know, there's some good stuff in there. There's some stuff with bacon, which is good. We got two flavors with bacon.
I don't know about the bacon and the sweet. I still haven't decided on that. I've tried it and I've been not disappointed, but like, you know, iffy about it.
Yeah. So it was fun. I like shooting food. This is what I've over the course of doing two versions.
Food doesn't talk back.
Well, I like it. It's a technical challenge, you know, and I can sort of take my time on it because we use like little stand-in.
It's a technical challenge to do the lighting or a technical challenge to deal with the ice cream?
All of it.
Okay.
Yeah, all of it. And it was fun because we only had like 2 minutes each scoop, you know, because we shot real ice cream. We didn't use like, you know, paste or, you know, starch or whatever.
Right.
Whatever they use.
Does it look better when it starts melting a little?
I think it does. You know, the standard.
Nikki disagrees?
No, she does. But like, if you look at, you know, ice cream shots by and large, you see the nice barking, you know, of the scoop where it's been taken out of the container. I don't like that. I tend to like, you know, where it starts to gloss over a little bit, or some of the scoops that we did, we just shot empty bowls, like not empty, but like this is, you're done eating it, you know, and there's this, you know,
skim of, yeah, there's the melted remnants of ice cream. Yeah,
exactly.
It's actually kind of cute,
but it was fun. And it was interesting to try and figure out how to make things look a little different.
Well, how did you collaborate on that? I mean, who decided to do what?
In terms of photos?
Yeah.
It was a collaboration. We both kind of did research on what ice cream looked like and what we liked about some of the photos and what we didn't like about some of the photos. We looked at lighting and tried to deconstruct, you know, how things were lit. And by and large, a lot of food photography is lit the same way. It's by and large, it's backlit, and then there's maybe a little kicker either from a reflector or a bare flash in the front just to pop highlights.
Do you think that the backlit thing has a lot to do with the idea that you want to make it feel like it's this beautiful sunny afternoon and lights coming in the window, like to have
that sort of
country morning feel?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
We're very new at this. This is the only project like this we've done. It's the second time doing it, but you know, it's really just the two of us on our own researching via the internet of what other people are doing and then trying to do variations on that.
Right.
But the fun part was not only, you know, shooting the stuff, but trying to come up with flavors, you know, because Nikki's kind of a foodie. She likes trying new recipes and coming up with new recipes. So coming up with all this stuff was a lot of fun on a lot of different levels.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, it was fun.
Overall, do you figure out how much time it took you?
Oh,
well, let me say this. How many pictures total?
How many pictures did we take?
Yeah.
Over 5,000.
And how many are in the book?
I think 128.
And how much retouching did you do?
Very little.
Okay. Because you were able to be so meticulous with the setup that you didn't have to do stuff.
Yeah, I mean there was some, you know, opening up of shadows on certain things or a little bit of color correction, but overall not much. Not much. I don't think anything went into Photoshop. I think it was all done in Lightroom.
See? You can do that nowadays.
Yeah, I mean it's actually pretty fantastic what you can do with Lightroom.
Yeah. Yeah.
Speaking of which. I segued right there?
You want to get into Lightroom right now?
I don't know. What do you want to do?
Yeah, we could talk about that. Well, you know what? Let's save that till later.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that'd work. Okay. So I went to a wedding this weekend.
You went to a fancy wedding. Went to a fancy wedding that I don't even know people this fancy other than you.
Yes, I went to a wedding
and they're fancier than you are.
Yeah, much fancier than I am. I was probably the least fancy person there. as I was a significant other of a relative of the fancy people, you know.
Otherwise known as a hanger-on.
Yeah, yeah. And at one point, the matriarch of the family asked me if I, like, to tell me about my family, because she thought that my family was the groom's mother's family.
Ah, okay, okay.
And I was just like, I would love to tell you about them, but I know nothing about them because I have nothing to do with them. And she was very confused looking.
But then why are you here?
Yeah, it was that kind of thing. Yeah. But it was you know, it was fun. It's nice going to a fancy wedding where everything's deluxe and you get to wear a tux. I wore a tux. I really was fancy. Wow. I tied my own bow tie and everything.
Look at you.
Yeah. And I brought my camera, and I don't normally bring my camera to stuff like that. And I brought my camera just because Conrad wanted me to take a picture of a great aunt of hers who's okay. You know, getting up there.
Sure.
And so she's like, you know, could you bring your camera? And I said, you know, sure. And I brought my camera, and I took some pictures of them, and then I bumped into the bride in one of the big halls during sort of the cocktail hour. And I said, oh, you know, Claire, just stand there for a second. And there was, it was a diffuse lit room, like curtains, but there was this little beam of light coming through the curtains that was hitting her face just so.
Mm.
And it was very, very pretty. So I took some pictures of her, and I actually put one of them up on the Google Plus group so people can go check that out. It was just, you know, it's fun, but man, I still wouldn't want to be a wedding photographer. I give major props to the people who can do that.
Now, what was the shooting situation there? How many people were there shooting it?
Two.
Okay.
And one of them, I could tell that it was a 5D Mark II by the sound of the shutter.
Okay.
Because it has a certain, the Mark II had a certain clunkiness to the shutter.
Yeah, you used to say it sounded like it was going to break.
Complink. You know, it's like it doesn't sound engineered tight, you know. It sounds like it's moving too much mirror for the amount of whatever they have moving it, magnets or motor or whatever it is. It was fine. So one girl on one of those with like a 24 to 70 or whatever, and then there was another woman with some other Canon. I think it was a Mark II or Mark III with a grip, and, you know, with a 70 to 200, like the usual wedding fare, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And both of them, each of them had a light in the hall. Who makes those? Is it Lumadyne? Who makes the sort of the larger strobes that they're bigger than speed lights, but they're smaller than like real strobes. Like, the ones that all the wedding photographers used to use with the pack on their,
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know what I'm talking about?
Where it's got like the little mini reflector on the front of
yeah,
it?
Yeah, 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 yeah. So,
is it LumaQuest?
Maybe. That's wrong. Somebody's going to point it out to us. Anyway.
Okay.
I said there were two.
So they had one of these out on stands or something?
Yeah, they were next to the band. By the way, this wedding had a band, and not just like a three-piece band. It was 12 guys, and they ran the gamut from, you know, they did everything from Ella Fitzgerald all the way to, you know, who would it be? The Black Eyed Peas. And they were really good. Really wow. good. In fact, the guitarist started singing an old Todd Rundgren love song.
What?
Yeah, like during the salad. He was like he was just standing up there singing sort of like background music. And I'm like, I know this tune. And I'm like, that's a Todd Rundgren tune from Something Anything.
Nice.
And I went up to him later and I said,
how many weddings are you going to go to now that are going to play Todd Rundgren?
Never, never going to happen ever again. And I said, Todd Rundgren? And he goes, oh man, you recognized it? And I said, yeah. And he's just like, oh, I was like, nice one. And he's just like, oh, thanks, man. I was a Todd head for years. Yeah. He's like this old, like 50-year-old guitarist guy.
Nice.
It was pretty funny. Anyway, long and short of it is I asked one of the photographers, I said, I thought that only the head lady was popping the big flashes, and this girl just had a on camera thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it turned out they were both popping. Each of them had one. And, you know, I didn't ask her settings and stuff, but I don't shoot that kind of stuff. But you have to imagine, I mean, it wasn't very bright, the thing popping off the ceiling, and it was a big room. So, you know, they must have been at, you know, F4, F5, at 6400. Or something, or 32, and just popping that off the ceiling just to like fill everything in a little bit, you know,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Just to take away some of the contrast.
Yeah, right. Because I mean, it's a big dark room. It was the walls were all glass. It was like this sort of in the round sort of pavilion kind of thing, and so it was all glass
like a conservatory type thing, like a greenhouse
exactly.
type thing.
Yeah, and it was like probably 150 feet across and 20 foot high windows on the walls.
Wow, beautiful.
It was gorgeous. It really was. And so, but filling that space with light is next to impossible, especially when it gets dark, I didn't bring a flash. So any shots that I took as the day went on, I just ended up, cranking it to 6,400 or 12,000and just shooting it at sort of a slightly slow shutter and getting these sort of blurry, more artistic-y kind of things, when everyone was dancing and whatnot. Mm-hmm. Another guest that was there, the guy was sitting at our table, cousin of Heather's, had a D4. Is that the high end?
Nikon, yeah. Nikon D4.
And I played with it a little bit just to, Nikon still confused me trying to figure out what button or what switch I have to hit to do, because every button and switch looks different and works differently on those things.
Right.
It's all very confusing. I'm sure that it makes perfect sense to a Nikon person, and it makes sense because each one is different, so your mind remembers them differently.
Mm-hmm.
But to somebody coming from nowhere, it's like, wait, you have to hold this down to turn this, to push that, to anyway. And I was playing with his camera at 6,400. It wasn't any cleaner than mine, at least on the screen. Because isn't that D4 supposed to be amazing?
It is amazing. But, I mean, keep in mind, you are looking at it on a, 1.2 million dot 3-inch screen.
Yeah, yeah. But, I mean, when I zoomed in on it, it was noisier than I expected it to be, I guess, is what I'm saying. I thought it was going to be like, oh, wow, look how clean that is, even compared to my Mark III. And it really wasn't. It might be in testing or whatever it is, but it was, it looked good.
You know what you need to look at? You want to see some clean high ISO, you know what you need to look at?
What's that?
Fuji X Pro.
Yeah, I've heard that. You mean smeared high ISO? So I had this fun time at this wedding, but like I knew I had to come back. I had three or four shoots this week. So yesterday I'm supposed to shoot this magazine cover and individual portraits, right? So three people on the cover and then individual portraits of each of them. And it's supposed to start at 2:00. I have to get there at 1:30 to set up. It was at the magazine has a little studio. And that's,
They have their own studio space.
Yeah, well, I mean, they have a, I don't know, say 12 by 20 room, 24 room that they can... that it's all white and it's, 10 or 12 feet high. So, you can set up lights and it's fine for the kind of sort of white background stuff that they like to do. I've also shot outside on the roof, which is beautiful. But I've shot for them a number of times before. And so I get the call last week. Hey, I know it's short notice, but can you come in on Monday? And I was like, yeah, sure. Monday's free. Let's do it. Because you should never say no to work, right? So I wake up yesterday morning and the weather's really crappy here in New York City. And I get migraines. These are, serious headaches.
Yeah, you get bad ones, like where you see colors and whatnot or,
Yeah. For me, it's mostly just I just can't even think straight and I want to vomit. That's pretty much they're bad. So I wake up yesterday morning and sometimes this happens when the weather's really bad and I have a migraine. And it's a bad one. It's a doozy. Probably the worst I've had in the last year. Now, my typical way of dealing with this is to take Imitrex, which is this sumatriptan, this drug, which apparently constricts blood vessels, which like lowers swelling in the brain, which is part of what they think migraines are caused by. So I take a full pill, which is my normal dose is a half of one of these pills. I get the bigger pill so I could break them in half and save money. Mm-hmm. But I took a whole pill because this was so bad. And I go and I lay down. Now, you have to eat something when you take this pill because it's really bad in your stomach, hard in your stomach. So I eat like a couple of scrambled eggs and just, force them down because you don't want to eat because you're not feeling well. I take the drug and I lay down and it doesn't make a dent. And now it's like 9:30, 10 o'clock. And I know I have to get there by, 1:30. So I got to leave by 12:30. So I'm like, okay, I have 3 hours to lick this thing. So slowly my headache starts going away, But the downside of this drug, especially when you take the full pill, is that it's really, really hard on your stomach. So your headache starts going away, but you feel like you have food poisoning for a little while. Now, I generally don't...
What is this stuff called?
Sumatriptan, Imitrex. It's the god's gift to whatever. And had I eaten more or better foods or some bread or something, I probably would have been fine. But I was in such a haze that I just ate a couple eggs and that wasn't enough or whatever. And by the time you start feeling sick, you really can't change anything. So anyway, so I'm to the point where I'm just like, I'm running my wrists under cold water to try to keep myself from getting sick. And I'm like sitting here and I'm thinking... All right, I got to get in the shower. I got to get dressed. I got to pack for the shoot because I didn't pack for the shoot the night before because I figured I'd have the whole morning to do it.
Right.
So is this all really boring?
No, go.
Okay. So
I know you're leading somewhere.
I'm going somewhere. So it comes. It's 12 o'clock. I got to leave at like 12:30. It's 12 o'clock. My alarm goes off to wake me up again. And I'm in such bad shape that I reset the alarm for 5 minutes later. And then 5 minutes later, and then 5 minutes later. Now it's 12:16. I haven't packed or taken a shower yet.
And so, you got to leave in 14 minutes.
Yeah, I got to leave in 20 minutes. Yeah. So I finally get up. I force myself into the shower. I get out, and I'm like have to like take breaks and sort of put my head between my knees like every few steps to, and I'm packing. But here's the thing: I can't cancel on these guys. I'm a pro, and that's my job. And they have three people that they scheduled to be there, right? Like, it's not just me and one person. It's me and, like, six other people who were all there at the same time. The reporter was going to be there. They're doing BTS footage of the shoot. It's me shooting these three people who have taken time out of their day. One's, like, a big author, you know, professor, you know. It's like these people are busy.
Right.
So, you know, I said, I got to go. You know, the show must go on, right? So I drink some Alka-Seltzer to try to calm my stomach. I even take one of my little half of chip of that like Quells stuff that I use for motion sickness because I got to go get on the train and ride it for 40 minutes, right? And when you're dizzy and sick to your stomach, the last thing you want to do is get on a train.
Right.
So I go get on the subway and I sit down and I've got my bag of a Mark III and L glass like that I'm leaning on, and then a bag with a couple alien bees and some other stuff at my feet. And I'm kind of not passing out, but kind of falling asleep on the subway because I'm just so overwhelmed by the feeling of nausea. And so I keep waking up like every few stops to realize where I am.
Right.
Finally get to the stop, get off, go up the escalator, walk the thing, go into the place, and I have a half an hour to set up before everyone gets there, and I'm still a mess, like no better than I was an hour and a half before. And I'm like, man, how am I going to do this? I'm going to have to run out of the room, run to the bathroom every like few minutes, you know, if this doesn't clear up.
Have you got an assistant at this point, or is this just solo?
I went alone. I was going to bring an assistant, but my usuals were busy. So I was just like, I figured I could do, I've done this kind of shoot alone, so I'll just do it alone, you know, not imagining that. I really wish I had an assistant yesterday because it would have saved me a whole lot of stuff. Right.
Right. Right.
So I get there and of course they, you know, my main contact comes in and I'm talking to her for a minute and I was like, she's like, hey, how you doing? I'm like, good. I'm like, I'm great. I'm in a bad way right now. I had a migraine this morning and I'm trying to overcome it, but it sounds like I probably drank too much last night. Right. You know, I mean, that's a good excuse, right?
Yeah, yeah,
oh,
yeah.
Oh, yeah, oh, sure. Yeah,
migraine, yeah,
the,
sure.
The Wadman feels sick, right?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
So I set everything up, and I'm fine, and I get the first guy to come in, and I do the individual portraits of him, and then I do the individual portraits of the second guy, and all of a sudden, the whole thing breaks like a fever breaking. Like, I was like, oh, my God, it's better. I don't know what I did. Yeah. And then I'm in. But because of all this haze, I was shooting a lot of these portraits at, you know, F8, F11, you know, real deep depth of field. But then at the end of each person, I ended up shooting some sort of short depth of field stuff at like 3.2. Right. So I get all three of them in there and I take a bunch of pictures of all three of them, the sort of the shots that are going to be on the cover. And one of them will almost certainly be the cover shot because I knew that that's kind of what they like for the cover. And then I wanted to try one that had them all sort of lined up in front of each other, you know, where it's just like head, head, head.
Sure.
And so I stop down and I take those pictures, not realizing that I did the entire first set, the ones that are probably going to be on the cover at F3.2.
So you've got two people that are soft.
Yes.
Ooh.
For like the money shots.
What you're being paid to do.
Yes. Now.
Now, is this because you were feeling poorly and didn't catch it? Or is this because you came back and went, okay, I'm ready to go. And you were so excited that you got, you know, that you were feeling better that you didn't think about it.
I think probably both. I almost never make mistakes like that. But I made a mistake and I came home and I'm looking at the pictures. I'm like, oh, that's a good one. That's a good one. That's a good one. Oh, zoom in on this one. I'm like, uh-oh. And
for a cover.
No. Yeah. I mean, it might be fine for a quarter page, but they're soft if it's going to be full page cover. So I'm in a lurch now.
You can't call these people and go, hey, can we get all 10 of you back so we can do this again?
Right. Exactly. So there's a few things here. One, there's muddling through because you're a pro and you have to do it anyway. This reminds me of a time when I was doing 365 portraits and I got food poisoning when I was in London. And the next day, I was in such bad shape that Andrea, my girlfriend at the time, found a friend of hers to come be that day's subject because she would come to us. Mm-hmm. And she came and we went out and we were taking pictures on the street. And every few shots, I had to literally put the camera down and sort of go into a fetal position on the grass because I was in such bad shape.
Nice.
And it was like that where I didn't know on the way into town, I was like, man, I made a mistake. I don't know how I'm going to do this. I figured even if I got through the shoot, I would have to lay down under a desk somewhere and like ride it out because there's no way I could get back on the train. And it was raining yesterday too, right? So it was a mess. So there's the thing of like muddling through. And if it was any worse than that, I probably should have canceled or figured out something else to do or pushed it back an hour or two.
But this is the thing. As a freelancer, you've got no backup.
Yeah. I mean, are there people I know who I could have called to help me with this? Yeah, maybe. But
that gets into relinquishing.
Right. My relationship with this client. And
right.
And then
you look like a schmuck for going, well, where's Bill? Oh, Bill's sick. He sent me.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Not going to happen. Not on my watch. Right. So, yeah, it was bad. And then the second thing is to always check your settings. Oh, and for the first set, because I was so completely messed up for the first like two sets. The pictures are fine, but I didn't realize that I had pushed my shutter speed to 1/200th of a second past 160. And at 1/200th of a second with alien bees or with external strobes on Canon, the sync ends up going. So there's like a little bit of darkness on one side of the frames. You know what I mean?
Oh, okay. Sure. Cause the flash fires in the wrong spot where
right,
the shutter.
Right. So that's fixable in post. But but it's the other thing that it's like I was so out of my mind that I wasn't thinking about that kind of stuff, you know.
Well,
and
it shows you that
even your automatic things. I mean, sure, I did a whole bunch of automatic things right, you know, things that. And when I say automatic, I mean like in my mind, automatic sort of muscle memory stuff I did right. But there are certain things that you should check and double check. It's sort of like good pilots always use the checklist, even though they've read the checklist thousands of times, because then they know
true.
They will never make a mistake.
That is absolutely my father was a pilot for years and he would use the pre-flight checklist every single time.
Right. Cause that's the right way to do it, because then you know, you will never forget anything.
Yep.
So anyway, I need to put a thing on my camera that says, check your aperture.
Check your settings. And it's interesting, because if this were a personal project, you would have canceled. If this were, you know, maybe your December project or something like
sure,
that.
Push it back to later that day.
Yeah. Or right. can we pick this up tomorrow?
Even
we'll
if
do
it
two
was,
the next day.
Even if it was one subject, I probably could have called at 9 a.m. and said, can we do this tomorrow or later in the afternoon? Or, you know what
right.
I mean? Like, is there something else we could do? But three
but
people.
There is that idea that you have to push through.
Well, you want to be the guy that gets it done regardless, and you know that's the guy they call back, right? They call back the guy who's easy.
Well, now they're not going to call you back because they're out of focus, but
right.
at least you were there.
Well, yeah, exactly. So anyway, what I ended up doing to finish the story is that I came home and I picked the best of the group shots, the one where their bodies were just about right. And I ended up comping in. I found heads that would work for the two guys in the back.
Nice. Did a little head swap.
Actually, you know what I did? I just swapped the faces.
Oh, okay.
So the outside, like the hair and the ear line and all that stuff, is the same. And what I did swap was just sort of like the features, because that's the stuff you're going to notice is out of focus or in focus.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, that's great.
And you saw it. I showed you last night.
Yeah.
Did you realize that it was faked?
Straight away. Yeah. Especially the one on the left.
I hate you and everything you stand for. And you didn't even know. I was just
it
comped in, and you were just like, "What?
No, they look great."
So so. The trouble will be if they say, oh, can we see all the other pictures like this one?
No. No, you may not.
And you know, at a certain point, I'm going to have to own up, or I'm going to have to just say, look, the group shots are tough, so I've comped together these four pictures that are our best options for the cover. You know what I mean?
There are no other group shots.
Yeah.
All that firing of the shutter you heard, that was just practice.
Yeah. I mean, and the two shots that I came out with are solid pictures anyway. So it's, you know, I'm not dying about it, but it's just, it's interesting, but it was rough. I was in bad shape. I texted, Conrad, and I was just like, when I was waiting for them, I said, you know, I'm here and I'm set up, but I don't know if I can go through with this. Like, this is bad. And I couldn't even imagine if you were the kind of person who had some sort of medical condition where, you know, certain things, you were on medication that made you really sick all the time, or, you know what I mean? That kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
That could make it really hard, you know?
Well, especially when you don't know if these things sort of strike without warning.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like you're feeling kind of punky for a day or two and it gets worse and worse. It's, you know, you wake up and you're out. And Nikki does the same thing. She'll wake up with her head just pounding and she's nauseous all day Yeah. You know, and you can't function.
Did I ever tell you the story of when I was at my first job in New York City? I was working as an art director at this agency. Did I tell this story before?
I don't know.
And I had a migraine. I got a migraine, and it was, I would have gone home, but I couldn't go home because that would involve sitting on the train for 45 minutes. And it was such a rager that I was like, I'm not going anywhere. So I laid down, I pushed my desk out of we were in cubicles with like desks built in, you know? And I moved my chair, folded it in, and I just laid down on the ground with like my coat underneath my head, and I fall asleep. Cause that's, you know, you want time to pass so that the headache can go away. So sleeping just fast forwards time.
You're right. Right. Right.
So I wake up and my creative director is lying down staring at me like, like exact same perspective as me. So the whole room is rotated 90 degrees and he's straight on to me.
You okay, buddy?
Yeah. Bronson was like, how you doing?
That's funny.
Yeah. Forever. I'll remember that. And I was just like, I'm bad shape. And he's like, okay. And he got up and left. I mean, I don't think he was trying to be a jerk, but
right. Right.
It was really funny. Yeah. Anyway,
hey, you're this one stop shop kind of thing. We've talked about this before. You need to have a mark on everything.
Yes. I think there's a number of names for what it is that I am, but
right.
Not all of them are flattering.
Interesting article about interesting debate, I suppose, going on about should retouchers get credit on an image?
Yes.
You know, it's photo by blah blah blah.
Yeah. Especially for a lot of the big wigs, right? I mean, in this article there is a they're using an example of a picture by Annie Leibovitz, right? And it's
well, it came from a Jeremy Cowart post.
Did he originally do it? Okay.
Yeah, he posed this question and used the Russell Brand, basically the photos from Annie's Disney campaign,
right,
where it's
right.
like all the different characters,
right?
You know.
You know, let's add the Jeremy Cowart thing too. But you see the originals and you're like, okay. Yeah, but that has nothing. That looks nothing like the final picture, right?
No. I mean, and in the case of the three haunted, the men from the Haunted Mansion, it's such a dramatic difference.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, ultimately, their pictures just looked like any of our pictures outside.
Right.
And this is what you get when you have, you know, big budgets and whatever it is, then you can, you know, have a bunch of big Elenchrome lights outside and a and whatever. But ultimately, you're basically creating an outdoor studio, right?
Right.
But ultimately, the real artistry is done post-production, right?
I think for a good number of photographers, yes.
Now, is the argument that is made, is the argument that should be made is that it wouldn't have happened without Annie. She is the Gregory Crutzen of this shoot. So whether or not she held the camera or shot the picture or retouched it, she was the creative director behind it. So therefore she is the artist. You know, somebody said,
and I think
me,
that's perfectly valid. I think saying that is perfectly valid.
Yeah. I mean,
you know, it's, you go see, you know, a Ridley Scott directed film. It's not, you know, it's a Ridley Scott film, or actually it's an RSA film, but it's not, you know, his DP's film. It's not the effects house's film. It's his vision. It's yeah. his film.
Yeah.
But photography is so widely considered a solitary endeavor.
Yeah.
That it somehow is exempt from that.
Yeah, or was for a very long time, right? I mean, mm-hmm, you weren't able to do these kinds of things really. I mean, yes, people did crazy things back in the days of darkrooms, but not like this, right? Now, famously, a lot of very famous photographers took pictures and then handed their film over, and all of the developing and printing and all the rest of that was done by other people. Did Cartier-Bresson's head printer, you know, get the credit that he deserved?
Mm-hmm.
You know, yeah, my friend Claude, you know, friend of the show,
mm-hmm.
was over last week, and we were trying to figure out what was wrong with this Hackintosh that I built him was crashing all the time, and I didn't know why. And it turned out we had a bad stick of RAM. That's what all this stuff was. It was corrupting hard drives. It was like crashing. It was like, what is going on with this thing? This thing should be stable as all get up, and it wasn't. And so he came over and we tested the RAM, and one stick was just like errors all the way through, and we took it out and everything worked fine. So anyway, new stick of RAM. That goes to show you RAM can go bad too. I haven't had a bad stick of RAM in years. Anyway,
I haven't either.
Practical upshot of this is that we had a long time to talk because it takes a long time to test RAM. And we were talking about the Daft Punk record, right? Which is this, you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
A couple of French guys who make electronica, right? Is that fair? Is that house music? What is that? I don't even know what that is now.
You know, I don't know what the, is it down tempo? Is it electronica? Is it chill? I don't
know. Man, we are going to get lambasted. Anyway, apparently most of their other stuff is very sample based, is very, you know, really truly electronic. But with this record, they recorded most of it live, or they, well, that's all in very big, you know, quotes.
Live in studio.
Yeah. Yeah. I meant live in the sense that they weren't actually playing anything or very little. Mostly it was, they had all these monster guys from the 70s and 80s, which is what they were sort of mimicking the sound of, come and play. So it was Omar Hakim on drums and Nathan East and what's that Johnson guy who played drums on Off the Wall. You know what I mean? Like these guys were in it, right? These were the guys. And they still play like the
pretty wide range of talent. I mean, Omar Hakim, big jazz drummer.
Yeah, but he also played with Sting.
Yeah,
you know what
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah.
So these are heavies, right? Real heavies. And I said to Claude, I said, yeah, you know, I could get, if I was Bill Gates, I could hire Nile Rodgers and Omar Hakim and Nathan East to come into my studio and jam for 5 minutes too. How does that make me the artist of the album? Because the chords they were playing on were like two chords. The lyrics are all get on the dance floor, make sure your life is like being on the dance floor, and you know what I mean? Like, I mean, it's super simplistic stuff, right?
I think maybe you're reducing it down a little much.
Well, I mean, sure. Yeah, yeah. They did some mixing and they did some keyboard stuff over the top of it. And I'm taking their example to the extreme.
I mean, that's like saying, you know, Bernstein's not a great conductor. All he's doing is interpreting, you know, what Mozart did, and everybody else is playing it, and he's just up there keeping time. It's a little bit of a reduction.
No, it is. But I think that what they're, I don't know. There's something about their whole thing is a little bit like my thing with Crudson, which is like at a certain point, if you hand off that much stuff, how much of it is still yours, right? This was my argument to Claude. Claude and I were discussing this. And Claude's argument was, you know, it's like anything. It's like where they say, keep taking things away from a story. And when you find the thing that makes it not a story anymore, where it's not the same story, then that's what the story's about, right?
Mm-hmm,
so you could take out Han Solo and Star Wars is still Star Wars because it's really about Luke, right?
Oh, now, really?
Well,
oh, really?
It needs Han Solo, and that's what makes it good, but it could be somebody else, right? You can't get rid of Luke. It would be a different movie, you know?
Okay.
And so in the same way, this thing happened because that artist was there and said, let's make it happen. So therefore, they do have ownership of it.
But I mean, you could say that about anything. I mean, you could say about any record.
What we could say, what about it?
That you know... Who, I mean, is it really?
Yeah, but
a
you
collaboration
know,
or is somebody?
Well, sure, but okay. But Paul Simon hires Steve Gadd and a bunch of monster guys to come play in his record. But ultimately those songs are Paul Simon holding a guitar, singing at a microphone. The rest of it is just window dressing, you know?
Yeah. But take somebody like Bill Evans Trio.
Yes.
You know, would it be, is it Bill Evans driving that whole thing? Or is it the collaboration of, you know, all these guys sort of riffing off of each other?
Sure. But the thing that is the signature of that, the thing that couldn't change is Bill Evans. Cause he played with different people over the years.
Right.
And it still
right.
all sounds like Bill Evans, you know?
I don't know. I mean, it's I guess.
Well, so the question with this whole Annie Leibovitz thing is she actually a creative mind behind this, or is she just has such a huge thing around her? You see what I'm saying?
Yeah. There's this cyclone of creativity that's always swirling around.
I've seen a number of documentaries about her and, you know, about her working, and I don't see her making really interesting artistic statements while she's talking about stuff,
mm-hmm,
you know,
mm-hmm.
Like the Crudson thing. It's like, okay, you know, I agree or disagree with you, but at least, okay, you're talking about this stuff on that level. You never know, you know, lots of people are, and I'm not putting this label on her necessarily, but are fakes, right? Like they are in a position where they have a certain amount of cachet and they are creating things and it has their name on it because she's like no longer a photographer. She's a brand. Right. Mm-hmm. And the funny thing is that now that, you know, she doesn't have any money and Condé Nast has bought up everything she owns or whatever the crazy deal was that she had to like give away everything because she doesn't have any money. She really is just a brand. You know, she's a shell of the person that she was in some ways, right? She doesn't even own her own work anymore.
Right.
So in the examples that Jeremy was talking about, I say definitely.
That the retouchers deserve the credit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, that
retouchers
are as
work?
Much the artists as anything. I think a lot of beauty work is the same way. Or at least I feel like... Should beauty photographers on their website show before and afters? Because so much is,
mm-hmm.
I don't know.
I wonder how the mechanics of crediting would work out, and where do you draw the line?
Hey, I don't show you the befores of most of my pictures. I mean, yeah, every once in a while on my website, I'll show you the before.
Right.
But I'm not, you know, the stuff on my portfolio are the final images. Now, I'm a little different because no one else has touched them but me, so I really can put them up there and say, this was all me.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how I would feel if other people had worked on them. When I was in the web world, I used to think if I did work with other people or, you know companies who, say, coded something that other people designed, but they have it on their website.
Right.
And maybe they say in collaboration with, like, a real small type underneath. But is anybody coming there going to know what you did and what somebody else did? And maybe what somebody else did is the thing that really made it, you know?
Right, right. No, that's a great point. And like I said, where do you draw the line? Does the art director get credit? Does the casting person get credit?
I mean, obviously.
Would these photos have been the same without, you know, Jack Black in them?
Right. Yeah. I mean, the casting is a big part of it. All that's a big part of it.
It's a very strange issue moving forward.
But I think the difference between that before picture and that and those after pictures in this post are night and day.
Literally.
This isn't like
literally night and day.
Yeah, exactly. Or day and night, right?
Yeah.
This is not the kind of thing that you could have done any other way.
No, and this is not making a few tweaks in Lightroom. This is pretty serious retouching.
Yeah, this is you are a photo illustrator using Annie Leibovitz's pictures as content.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe she didn't take the background picture. Okay, well, who does they get the credit? You know, it's tricky. But I would definitely say that as time goes forward and people have more and more. Do more and more stuff in post that becomes much more of an issue.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a good question. I think that it's a little bit of wimpy for Jeremy not to actually answer his own rhetorical question. He says, what my opinion is, but I'm curious to hear yours first. It's like,
yeah, no. So let's hear it.
Yeah.
You know,
tell me what your opinion is. Yeah, exactly. Are you sitting there because you don't know what other people are going to say and you don't want to be on the wrong side of the issue?
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, I know, you know, like John Keatley uses a retoucher and he's quick to point out, I use a retoucher. I send my stuff here. I collaborate with these guys. And he's very quick to point out, look, it wasn't just choosing somebody out of a phone book. It was talking to people who get where I'm trying to go and can help me get there.
Right. Yeah.
And that I think that's fantastic. I think it's forward thinking. It's like, look, these are my limitations, but creatively, I can think creatively beyond my practical limitations. So let me get somebody in here who can fill that gap.
But take that to logical conclusion. You have painting skills. I have no painting skills, say, right?
Mm-hmm.
I bring you in and I stick you in front of a canvas and I said, I want a mountain up here. And then you paint the mountain. And I say, I want this down here. When we're done, is that my painting or your painting? Because really could not have done it without you.
That's true. And look, you've just described, you know, celebrity fashion design.
Yes. Yep.
You know, you think celebrity XYZ is in there with markers and some Prismacolors designing clothing? Of course not.
I wish they were.
I do too, but they're not by and large. Maybe there are a few that are, but most of them are sitting with a team going, do you like this? Do you like this? Do you like this? And they go, no, I want this one a little more blue. I want this one a little, you know, whatever.
Right.
It's
they probably don't actually say more blue. They're like, I want it more hot. did you see the psych a few weeks ago when Jules had a t-shirt that Sean had gotten her and she's like, I really just want to throw it out. And he goes, I spent weeks looking for a shirt that just screamed fashion. And they show the shirt and it just says fashion in sequence. I just searched for weeks for a shirt that screamed fashion.
Yeah, yeah.
It's good stuff.
Yeah, it's these lines are blurring more and more and more and more.
Mm-hmm. Well, and then we need to change the way we designate them then.
I think that's probably true. You know, and I look, the teams are getting bigger.
My former agent said to me, you know, that people don't know that I have lit my own stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I have to explain to people that I've lit my own stuff. See, that's my thing, is that at the point at which the people who are doing it themselves are just like, oh, yeah, it's good, but it was probably a team of 30 people who did it, is the assumption. But they actually did do it all themselves. It's like, it's
Do you feel slighted by that, then?
A little bit, because I'm like, hey, I'm doing the things on the same level, all freaking me.
Mm-hmm.
You have a team of 13 people, all who have specialized skills, and I have all those skills, mother breaker, you know?
Yeah.
Bite me, you know? And there's a little bit of, like, you should hire me, because I'm actually good at all of these things, and I don't need a team of 30 people
okay.
to do it.
But, as the counterpoint to that, I can spend, let's say I'm client whatever.
Right.
And I've got $100,000 to spend on a project, and you say you've got all these skills, but if I'm spending $100,000, I want more than just your eyes on my brand. I want more than just your hands on my project.
Yeah, but when
I want to know that there's a producer, that there
oh,
are
sure. yeah, yeah, you know, producers in that lead. Sure.
I want to know that there are people dedicated to my project. And I think that's
that's a bit of an illusion, though. I think that is a unfair bias.
It may be, but it is the way it is.
That's like saying, I want to go to this restaurant and it's going to be so much better because they have two sous chefs instead of one. You know,
mm-hmm.
that I deserve pampering is essentially what you're saying, which is my brand deserves 16 eyes and not just 2 eyes. And the problem with that is that when has the best stuff ever come out of a group decision?
Rarely.
Right. So why is that always the gold standard that, like, oh, we need more people involved? More people involved doesn't guarantee quality.
No, but there's this illusion, I think, that you are being taken care of, that your widget, whatever it is,
right,
is getting looked over by a group of professionals, not just one.
Right. I don't disagree. I understand what you're saying. I just think I want to overturn that belief.
And I think you're right to do it. I mean, look, I mean, we're going to talk about Apple later, but has Apple had the same vision post Steve?
No, right. Right. I don't know.
So to your point, yeah, there's some validity there. But unfortunately, you've also been in the advertising game where, you know, you need 50 people to get anything done.
Right. Sure. You know, and sometimes you have to work within that, and that's fine. And, you know, I can work within that. And, you know, I have a producer and I have people who come in and I don't do hair and makeup and I don't do wardrobe. Like, there's people who do that stuff. I have assistants, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But when people start thinking I must have had a lighting designer because my light is really nice, I feel like a schmoo to have to explain to them. I don't feel like I should have to explain that I did my own lighting.
Right.
You know, that just feels a little ridiculous. Like, who are... I don't know. Anyway, long and short of it.
Hey, what do you think of this Nat Geo cover?
Of the James Cameron thing.
Jim Cameron.
I think it is a neat concept. I think it's fairly well done. I think it's well done. It's not like, oh my God, it's going in my inspiration box, but it's really well done.
Can I tell you what bugs me about it?
What?
The drop shadow around his foot.
Let me look at it.
Actually, the drop shadow's on both sides.
That's what bothers you about it?
Yeah. They're just heavy. They're just...
Oh, yeah. Those are not very good.
Yeah.
And, like, sort of the him going to the bottom and having the stuff come up.
Yeah. But technically, it's an interesting idea. I mean,
Okay. It's a great idea. So the idea is that, look, James Cameron... You know, went down Titanic a billion times. He went to Challenger Deep. He went down to, you know, the bottom of the Mariana Trench alone. Only the third person ever to do that in the first in 50 years.
Can you imagine that? I mean, you've got, what, 5 miles of water above you?
That would be 7 miles of water.
Okay, 7 miles of water between you and oxygen.
Yeah, yeah. That it takes, you know, hours and hours and hours to sink that far.
I would be terrified.
Oh yeah, it's crazy. Anyway, but you know, you ever see the Making of the Abyss where he's like underwater,
yeah, sure,
like looking at dailies underwater?
Sure.
So he, so this photographer, who's this guy? What's his name? His name is Marco Grob. Anyway, they had this idea to have Jim Cameron underwater for this shot. And there's a video on this page. I'll put the page in the show notes. It's a 5x5 .tv/OTP/ what are we at? 59. And his idea was to shoot James Cameron underwater. Now, you have to get a tank. They had a producer find a tank. And then they filled it up with water and they lit it so that you don't get any reflections. And then Jim Cameron comes in the room. And this is why I love people like this, because this is how I would be if I were him, right? He comes in the room, he says, okay, so we're doing an interview, and then I'm putting on a wetsuit. I have 2 wetsuits with me, so you can choose which one. And then we go in the tank, and we do this, right? Not like, oh, I don't know if I want to go in the tank, and you know
right,
what I mean?
Right, right, yeah.
He's just like gung-ho. And the guy was like, oh, actually, we're going to do a quick traditional portrait beforehand. He's like, okay, great, we'll do that, and then I'll put the wetsuit on and bubble, like, all just sort of like, let's collaborate, let's do this
what do you,
together.
What do you need from me to make
we're
this
all
happen?
In, right? Yeah, like, you're, yeah. I know you're doing your job. What is my job, and how can I do it better? You know, and they show him get up in the water, and they show him underwater holding his breath for what looks like 30 or 60 seconds at a time, posing different ways, eyes open in the water. I mean, you know what I mean? Like, just, really?
Yeah, total pro.
Yeah, like, total pro. Now, of course, he is a media whore, and he is
really?
He is used to being underwater, so yeah. This is no new news to him. But it just, this kind of shoot is, it just goes to show you what can happen if you have a budget, so you could do things like get a tank to put James Cameron in, and a subject who is totally down with what you're doing. Mm-hmm. You know, that magic things can happen when those two things come together. And
if you were to spitball a budget for this, where would you put it?
Cost or what he got paid?
No, cost.
Oh, he seemed like he had a few assistants and that kind of stuff. They had to get the tank, lights, $5,000 maybe. I mean, it wouldn't be that bad. You could do it. I mean, if you're in a place like LA or New York, you can do anything, you know. If I, you know, I was talking to my producer, and she was like, I was like, what's the craziest thing you ever done? She goes, I had to get an elephant for a shoot once.
Wow.
You know, it's like, if you're in Alabama, where do you get an elephant, you know? But mm-hmm. like New York City, oh, there's the elephant wrangler guy who owns an elephant, you know, and he'll bring it in and you can shoot it. You know, I'm sure there's the same in LA.
Right.
So, I mean, could you do this for less? Sure. You know, you could do something like this underwater at the town pool, you know?
Yeah.
You wouldn't now, have as much
to
control
be fair.
Over
there's light. Also a lot of post going on here.
Oh yeah. Yeah. In fact, I think arguably this picture would have been almost as cool or cooler if it was just as it was. Like, I don't
just
think
the tank.
Yeah. I don't think the post is particularly great either.
Without compositing in all the rocks and the dirt and all that.
Right. Yeah, he's like compositing to the seabed and the lights behind him. I mean, I think it's competently done, but it's not like, it doesn't look seamless to me. It looks composited, mm-hmm. you know? I do. What do you think about the fact that they got rid of the yellow borders at the bottom and had them overlapping? I think that makes it look cheesier.
Yeah, that's what I said at the beginning, that this crazy drop shadow that they've added on both sides to make him...
If it was a really just, tight drop shadow, like just a few pixels, that would have been more real looking to me.
I wonder if whose idea that was, whether, because he's all 3D guy, right? You know, so
you think I don't think Cameron's idea. No, he moved on.
You don't think?
No, he got his picture taken and he moved on.
Hmm.
Done.
See ya.
There's a creative director for Geographic named Bill Maher, and his idea, I mean, it's probably somebody in there. Again, you know, group decision, not always the best decision.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's interesting, you know.
I do love that he's just like, where do you want me? And he just jumps
yeah,
in.
Yeah.
Like,
and
there's no.
You watch the video and you go,
like,
that's...
really? I need to be in the water?
I have had a handful of subjects who were like that cool, and it's always the best stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what do you need from me? Okay, yeah, sure, I can do that. You know, like that kid on the skateboard with the beard and that Drabble picture.
Sure.
Of mine. You know, we met up with him and we were like, oh, we're going to get flowers and a rope and maybe have you on your skateboard, like skating to some event. And who knows if you're bringing somebody flowers or going to tie him up. And he's like, so you want me to be Snidely Whiplash? And we were like, yeah. And he's like, okay, I can do that. You know what I mean? Not like you want me to be Snidely Whiplash. I don't know if I want to be portrayed that way. You know, it's that whole game.
You know, he can hold his breath for a ridiculously long time.
Cameron?
Yeah.
Well, you would too if you would do if you knew you were going to be 7 miles down. And might
Hey, this kind of reminds me of going from the seafloor to the top of the world, right?
Yeah.
These shots that Joe McNally did from the top of the Khalifa. Is that how you pronounce it? Khalifa? The Burj Khalifa?
Is it the Burj Khalifa?
Is that it?
I don't know.
Something like, I don't know how to pronounce it.
It's not the Burj Dubai anymore?
I don't know. Okay. Anyway, world's tallest building. And he hoofed himself up there and then proceeded to hang off the side.
He probably took an elevator.
No, he climbed. There's a video.
Okay, he climbed the last 100 feet, but I'm sure he took an elevator to the top.
Still.
Yeah, you couldn't pay me. Now,
give
here's the
guy some credit.
Which would you rather be? In a small claustrophobic thing 7 miles down, you couldn't get out. You knew, even in an emergency, you couldn't get out for 4 hours. Or off the edge of the tallest building in the world with a few ropes.
Building.
Really?
Yes.
Okay.
Because drowning is a horrible death.
And falling 2,600 feet?
The falling part would be great. It's a sudden stop that wouldn't be so great. You know?
Yeah. I mean, You're right.
I just, you know what? I a lot of respect for Joe McNally. He's been doing this a long time, and to still get out there and just hang off the edge of this building and shoot away, I couldn't do it. But, you know, pretty cool stuff.
Okay.
And how tall is this thing? It's like, what is it, 2,000 feet? 2,700 feet.
It's really tall. It's taller than you and me combined.
I was just going to say something really snarky.
But then you realize that you'd be making fun of yourself?
No. No.
Hey, we should talk about our sponsor for the day.
We have a sponsor?
We do. It's Shutterstock.com.
Shutterstock. Oh, right. Right. Okay. Shutterstock, if you need images, vectors, they have got 47 to choose from, and all of them.
Jeffrey.
All of them. Wait a minute. All of them are fantastic.
Okay. I think you have the numbers wrong. There's a few more than 47 now.
Yeah.
They're adding 10 a day. No, I'm sorry. 10,000 new images a day.
Is it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They've got over 20 million of these things.
25 million. What's the lookup? Give me something to look up.
You know what? James Cameron was on the seafloor. Let's see if they got any underwater shots.
Okay. Underwater. 126,364.
See seafloor. Let's see if there's any actual pictures of the seafloor.
Wait, seafloor.
That'd be two different words.
I think so.
Yeah.
4,254.
And one of them is probably the one they used on the cover of National Geographic. I wouldn't put it past them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Look, they've got everything. You've, like he said, you got the photos, you got the vectors, you got the illustrations, you got video clips. Even National Geographic sometimes needs pictures of the seafloor for their cover. And, you know, they could get it at Shutterstock.com. Cheap, too. What is it, $19
yep.
for an image? Fantastic.
What it starts at.
Yeah. Look, you go to Shutterstock.com. There are 10,000 new images a day, so you're finding new stuff all the time. It's affordable. There's no extra charge for large files. You can download any image, any size. You pay only one price. So they don't nickel and dime you for the high-res images. They've got this easily curatable and shareable light box system. So you can choose your favorite pictures and then add them to a light box gallery as you search. So, I like this picture. Pull it over to the light box. Send those to Jeffrey.
Send it over to your client and say, hey, what do you think of these?
Jim, are these close enough to what it really was like to be on the seafloor?
Mr. Cameron.
Yeah. I love how the guy calls him Jim.
Yeah.
It's like, I loved working with Jim. Yeah. I loved working with Sting.
Bob De Niro and I are going to go have coffee later.
Yeah, okay. there's something called enhanced license access where you can, if you need it to print out, you want to, you know, use an image for a trade show or, you know, big banner for your trade show, that kind of thing. You can get that kind of license for your image.
So what you're saying is that Apple could have licensed those Ocean Wave images from Shutterstock for WWDC yesterday.
They very well may have. We may never know. I like the fact that they got the vectors and the icons and the infographic templates and the video clips, right? They got everything. So if you want to make an online version, you want to make the iPad version of that cover and you want a fish swimming through, you go search for fish videos and I'm sure there's 10,000 fish videos or at least 1,000. How many fish videos are there? The best part about it is that you can go to Shutterstock.com and when you sign up for a free account to browse, you get
35,000
videos of fish. That's
a lot of fish.
That's what I'm saying. You get an account rep dedicated to you. They'll answer all your questions 24 hours a day, support during the week, right? So go to Shutterstock.com, sign up for your free browse account. You don't need a credit card or anything like that. When you decide that you want to purchase, you want to get one of those monthly things. How much are the monthly plans?
Well, they're tiered, okay? So what you can do is you can say, hey, I only need this for, you know, a month.
Right.
So $249 for a month.
Okay.
Or you can do it quarterly, which gets you down to $229. Or you can do it annually. That saves you 20%, gets you down to $199.
No, but what do you get for $250?
25 images a day.
A day.
Right.
You know, this is mad stuff. So when you decide to buy, use the offer code PICTURES6. Sorry, it's June. PICTURES6, and you'll get 30% off any package.
That's pretty good.
And we thank them very much.
35,000 pictures of fish. No, videos of fish.
Videos of fish, Jeffrey. Pictures, there's probably 30,000. So PICTURES6, get 30% off any package. Shutterstock.com, no credit card needed. We thank them very much for their support.
You know, I wonder how their business model is changing with everybody wanting video now. You know, we talked last week about it's probably getting good. You think? It's got to be changing, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know what it is? Like the kind of stuff you get from them for video, which would make a lot of sense, are things like, you know, you're doing you need a helicopter shot over New York City.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
a lot of B-roll stuff.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. But that's the kind of stuff that adds a whole other dimension to your work.
Sure. And often the stuff that's really expensive to shoot yourself.
Of course. You know, like if you're Gary Yost, you can, you know, hire helicopters and get stabilizers and, you know, you could be all fancy, but we're not all fancy like Gary. So some of us need to just buy that kind of footage. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You all right?
Yeah, no, I'm looking through some of their footage and it's
really good.
Well, yeah, like you were just saying about, you know, New York. You know, they've got those, you know, like the real slow flyovers of New York City at night.
Right.
You know, that's just very cool. And you're right. It does add production value.
Yeah. I mean, that's the kind of stuff, like I could do these short film things, but mm-hmm. I'm never going to be able to get in a helicopter and fly over New York.
But I mean, think of how amazing that is that, you know, 15, 20 years ago, 10 years ago, even, you know, you would have to go shoot this stuff.
Yep.
And now you can clickety click and find what you need. It's just amazing to me.
It's a marketplace.
Yeah. It's amazing.
So, all right. Bunch of new stuff this week.
Bunch of new stuff.
Where do you want to start?
Let's start with Lightroom.
We're going to get a little techie for the next few minutes.
Little techie.
Sorry, guys. We're going to talk about gear because
So new version of Aperture from Apple, right?
No.
Oh, yeah. Right. No.
Yeah. What was the last time you guys got a version of Aperture?
I think it's
6-7 years ago.
3.4.2 is the current version, something like that. But Lightroom 5 out of beta. Apparently, they squashed, according to their blog, 400 bugs between when it was released in beta and now.
I did not try the trial. Did you?
No.
I wonder if it's any good.
I don't know.
The beta. I heard, you know, there's not a whole lot in it that I'm that excited about. Let's see. Well, it's supposed to be faster overall. And I will tell you, I just installed it this morning. I upgraded. I installed it this morning. And just jumping between folders seems mm-hmm. to be noticeably faster.
You know what's strange? At least as of right now, it's only available through Adobe.
Okay.
Amazon and B&H and things like that, it's not listed on their sites yet.
Well, you know what? I think that they like the idea of just having it be this is not a subscription, though. This is you can buy this outside of...
Right. But I'm wondering moving forward, since it's all Creative Cloud now, are they going to restrict Lightroom from retail and only make it available through Adobe?
I personally wouldn't mind that much, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because you're going to buy it. Okay. I buy them from Adobe anyway, just because I like the idea of just downloading the latest version whenever I reinstall and whatever. And then everything's all in one place, so I don't have to like find discs and whatever. I just have to remember my.
And look, this is not a ton of. This is $79.
$79 to upgrade.
$149 for the full.
And I use Lightroom.
It's $149, right?
Yeah, I think it's $150. Yeah. So if you had bought the $50 Lightroom 4s, which are still out there probably, mm-hmm. plus $79, you're like $130.
Yeah.
But
I'm still curious whether the Adobe is listening. Hoopla is going to turn into something like a $29.95 or a $24.95 or even a $20 Creative Cloud bundle for Photoshop and Lightroom.
Maybe, but you know, I'm going to buy Lightroom. I want to support the people who make Lightroom because I think they're doing really good work.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And it does feel a lot snappier, especially on a machine like mine. Maybe they threaded it more. You know, I don't know what they did under the hood, but it definitely feels tighter than 4. Just
how is moving
minutes.
Moving between library and develop? Because there was some lag going through those modules. Does that feel snappier? See.
Oh yeah, like night and day faster.
Really?
Yeah.
Good to know. Good to
yeah.
know.
Like instantaneous faster.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it took a second to go between those.
Yeah, it wasn't a long time. I mean, you're not sitting there making a cup of tea, but it was a noticeable little.
It was a second or so, or a second or two. It's snap, right between them. So like you know, that's good news. There's that upright thing that helps you straighten pictures.
Right, new perspective correction.
Which I've not tried because I really what do I have that I could take a picture? Let's see if there's a picture I can pull up right now.
There is also we put this up yesterday. New Craft and Vision book, ebook called Lightroom 5 Up to Speed.
Oh, really?
Yeah, by Pete Vandenhind. It's 77 pages. Comes with about an hour's worth of video. It's $5.
Oh, okay.
Right. Or you can get the bundle if you're new to Lightroom. They've got a bundle. It's Pete's previous book, Lightroom 4 Unmasked, which is like this 300 plus page ebook that's everything you want to know about Lightroom, and you can get both of them for $20. So head over to Faded and Blurred. It's right on the front page.
I'm going to turn on upright here for one of my pictures, and
Now is upright working in conjunction with the lens database?
It's in so the, it knows it's in what the you lens shot? Correction okay, section. And there's also a constrained crop and remove chromatic aberration. They've added a few little functions in there.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can tell it to make vertical or make things level or full, which I'm assuming does both. You know, I saw a couple things online where people were just like, you know, we gave it this picture and look at this stupid thing that it did with it. And you look at the picture and you go, it would have no idea what is that picture. You know what I mean?
Right,
like you took a picture of somebody's face from an angle. How does it know that that's a face and not a building? You know what I mean? Right. Like it's going to try to do it.
Look, it's a same thing happened when Content Aware Fill came out. You know?
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah.
It's not going to do everything every time.
Right. Could it be a useful tool? Yeah. I mean, I did a lot of this stuff. I would manually do it using the vertical and horizontal transforms, the mm-hmm. manual lens correction stuff. So I would, you know, lean stuff towards me or away from me. But I think this does a better job in that it stops it from getting wonky looking when you do it more than, say, 8 or 10 points to either side. It would look stretched out. Where I think
so
this does a little magic.
Architectural shooters, are they going to love this tool?
My guess is yes.
Yeah.
You know, maybe Gary Yost should use this for that architectural stuff he was doing.
Is this going to replace fancy tilt-shift lens?
No, I do not think it will.
Yeah.
I think it'll, I have this picture and this is the best I could do with a straight lens. Let's try to figure out a better way to work with it.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's all stuff you could have done in Photoshop back in the day, but now you can just do it easier here. Yeah.
From the demos I've seen, it looks like the results have been greatly cleaned up as well. Not as much smearing or fringing.
Yes, could very well be. It looks like the quality of those corrections is actually pretty impressive.
Mm-hmm.
I will give them a thing. And then there's that. So there's smart previews, right? Which basically makes previews of all your stuff so that you can take it all on. Basically, it makes caches of all your raw files or of the raw files you choose so that you can have them on your laptop, say your MacBook Air that Jeffrey's going to buy. when you don't have enough room to fit all your stuff, you can still take it. You can make changes. And when you come back, it syncs that metadata back.
So I wonder, what does it do? Is it creating little temporary sidecar files again?
No. I mean, what it's probably doing is making a temporary image, which is a flat image.
Mm-hmm.
It obviously can't take all of the raw data with you because that doesn't make any sense.
Sure. You know? But so maybe there's some way where it's. I mean, it's got to have some of the raw data because you're altering it. So there's that raw data has got to be there as a reference, I would think.
Or you're altering it and it's doing the best it can with the JPEG and then it puts that all on the thing later.
Some sort of little snapshot.
Maybe what it does is it takes snapshots with the highlights pulled down and the shadows pulled up and it has those three together so we can sort of mix and match them to approximate what it would look like. You know,
I think it's a great feature. So many people now are editing in the field.
Yeah,
and editing remotely, they're going to sit at a coffee house, or you're editing at a shoot.
I think it's a good feature for some people. It's not a useful feature for me, just because that's not how I work. But sure, you know, if that's your thing. And then apparently the book module is supposedly greatly improved.
Mm-hmm.
I will be interested to see that. I ended up making sort of PDF portfolios of my book, quote unquote. Using their tools, and I found it limiting.
Yeah,
but maybe the new ones are a lot better. In which case, I'm all for it. Let's talk. You know,
apparently now you can make your own layouts.
Well,
that was one of the big things.
That was a huge thing.
Yeah.
So we will see. But I'm pro that. And there's a few other like little things, but I will say that it's a whole lot snappier.
That is good to know.
Yep. So if you've been frustrated by 4. You might want to upgrade. Okay, so Apple yesterday announced some new stuff. They announced new...
Yeah, they did.
Okay, new Airs. And we're not going to take too much time on this. New Airs with Haswell, which means they'll get better battery life.
That's 12 hours on the 13-inch.
But no Retina displays, no nothing. It's pretty much just a new chip in there.
You know what? Their big thing was battery life. You throw a Retina display on there and now you're back down to, 8-9 hours.
The problem with battery life things like that is that that's great if you're web browsing. The minute you have Lightroom on there and you're really messing around stuff and making previews and exporting and it's actually chugging at full speed, you're not going to get any longer battery life. You know,
maybe, yeah.
Like
maybe.
It's the battery life comes when it can turn itself off, not that it's actually that much more efficient when it's on.
I will say, with regard to battery life, the new AppNap feature that's coming in the next version of OS X looks pretty amazing.
Okay. It's just more ways to put other things to sleep.
It's only giving processor cycles to what you can see.
Well, that's useful, except for when you're rendering out stuff in Lightroom behind you playing on the web.
Maybe.
I want to make sure that you have control over that because sometimes you want things to have juice in the background, you know?
I'm sure they'll give you control.
Yeah.
Apple's all about giving you user control. See what I did there?
Yeah, it was nice. I like that. All right. But the big thing for us people was the new Mac Pro.
Oh, right? It's gorgeous.
Okay. It's gorgeous. So this is not out yet. It won't be out until later this year. They just said later this year, right? Did they say the fall?
I would not expect to see this before October. Mavericks comes out.
Right. Dual Xeons like before, 4 sticks of memory. They didn't give any max memory thing, but it's 4 sticks. So until they come out with 16 gigabyte DIMMs, which they might have, but are going to be incredibly expensive.
Yeah, they're going to be...
Say 32 gigs or maybe 64 gigs max, but we'll see. The hard drive in it isn't a hard drive. It's just a stick SSD that's straight on the PCIe 3 bus, so it can do 1,250 megs a second.
Yeah.
Which is amazing, but about time.
Yeah. 12 cores, which is nice.
Up to 12 cores, right? Yeah, I wonder. Yeah. And then dual GPUs, dual workstation class GPUs. Now, the classic thing about workstation class GPUs is that they are not necessarily always the fastest GPUs, but they can do things like 10-bit color, and they are more compatible with the super high-end software so that they show less glitches when you're doing 3D rendering and that kind of stuff. But typically, actually, the fastest GPUs tend to be the gaming ones that a generation later, or 6 months later, or a year later, the same chip ends up getting used in a workstation card that costs four times as much, but is essentially the same chip.
Yeah.
Right. That's like the,
I mean, they're claiming 7 teraflops.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's going to be a monster. I think each video card's going to have 6 gigs of RAM. I wonder how they're doing the dual cards. Are they doing like an SLI thing, or are they using each one as a renderer? Like, are they doing multiple GPU OpenCL rendering in the OS? Are they adding that to the OS?
Nobody knows yet. Well, not
right.
nobody.
See, but that's the thing, is there are as many questions as there are answers to what this is now.
But apparently it will drive 3 4K monitors out of the box.
Right. And it is a tiny thing. It's what, 10 inches by 7 inches or something?
Little over 9 inches tall.
Right.
Little over 6 inches in diameter. It's a black cylinder.
Right.
I mean, it basically looks like a lens hood.
Like a waste paper basket.
Yeah, it's the hood for your 7200 is about
now,
how big it is.
And it's just got a fan in the middle. The back is just 4 USB 3s, like 6 Thunderbolts, audio in and out, Ethernet in and out, or Ethernet, 2 Ethernets, and power, right? So basically
HDMI as well.
All right. Yeah. They're expecting you to plug everything in Thunderbolt.
And it lights up.
Yeah, when you spin it around. But I don't understand how you're spinning it around when you have cables plugged into it.
I don't know.
But like I said, I don't, you know, at the point at which you have that, okay, well, I need hard drives. Okay. Well, then you have another big box next to it that also has all your hard drives. Oh, and I need that card that needs a PCI Express slot. Oh, so then you have a big box that has a thing that, connects via Thunderbolt that plugs in. So,
yeah, but you don't, that's the thing.
You don't, or you can, who doesn't?
You.
I would. I would need a lot more storage than a stick of SSD in there is going to give me.
What are you going to need? You're going to need a 4-drive array? Okay, so that's one box.
Okay, another box next to it. Right. But, I mean, that's just me, and I'm a minimalist, right? I don't have a lot of stuff. I'm just saying that all this stuff always looks good when it's just the single thing and no wires are plugged in, you know? Mm-hmm. It'll be interesting.
I think this thing is gorgeous.
I think it's gorgeous. I think it's going to be very fast. The problem, I mean, since we're a photography podcast foremost, this is not going to be that much faster for photography than the top of the line iMac. In fact, I don't know that it will be much at all.
Yes.
Because for photography, things are not well threaded.
Yeah.
This is visualization.
Right. This is 3D rendering.
This is a developer machine if Xcode's that well threaded. It's compiling, it's rendering. It is not it's not going to make a huge difference. I mean, yeah, that SSD is going to be fast. Yes, the processors will be fast, but if you're just using a core or two, which is all that Lightroom and Photoshop ever use, you know, you're wasting a lot of the juice, right?
If you're rendering video, you'll probably see some pretty healthy benchmarks.
Yeah, man, I'm going to be interested to see how loud this thing gets, because it's got to cool down a whole lot of stuff in a size of a toaster, you know?
Yeah, but think of it. It's got this little sort of Venturi tube kind of solution to cooling.
Okay.
I don't know. I can't imagine that it's going to be really loud.
It'll be interesting.
What else? iOS 7?
Yeah, I don't really care about that. I mean, the new camera looks really cool.
Yes.
In the sense that you can finally do square photos in the camera app. But, you know, sure.
They've also added filters.
Yeah, because we all know how much I love filters.
Because your stuff's just all straight out of camera. Shut it. Shut it.
Well, on my phone it usually is. you said that some photographers said that they need to start doing RAW out of the iPhone camera. Who said that?
I can't remember where I read this, but there was somebody saying that, you know, if Apple wants to get serious, they need to do one of two things, either make a camera or somehow get the iPhone to shoot RAW. And I guess it's an interesting idea.
Apple does not need to make a camera. Because the iPhone is their camera. They're never going to make a separate camera.
Well, they did make a separate camera.
Okay, yes. Back in 1996, they made a separate camera, but they would never do that now. That's not the business that Apple wants to be in.
I wonder what the, I mean, how much more can they eke out of a sensor that's, you know, the size of your pinky nail or smaller?
Oh, pinky nail. That sensor's tiny. That sensor's like, you know, the size of a zit on your forehead. That sensor's tiny. It's not the idea that like, oh, if we only had access to the raw data, we'd get such better pictures out of it. If there was that much more headroom in that sensor, they would bake that into the JPEG engine, you know?
Yeah, maybe.
Which is why they have to do the HDR stuff, which is great. But like, you know, it's taking multiple exposures and it's doing that because that's their answer to it. One thing I would like is to be able to say, take HDR and don't give me the original and the HDR. Just delete the other one, you know?
Can you not do that now?
No, it takes both, and you have to go manually delete it, as far as I know.
Hmm.
Which is annoying, because it's like, I just want to take the picture. I don't want to have to like go in and like delete every other picture because I'm shooting RAW, or shooting HDR, rather. Anyway, I think that the iPhone camera is what it is. It is not the replacement for a real camera. It never will be with a sensor that small, you know. Mm-hmm. There are limitations to – there's physical limitations to things, and that's fine.
I know, because you think if you can't have per pixel sharpness, it's not a good photo. Blah, blah, blah.
Did I ever say that?
You did say that. You've said that several times.
I've never said it can't be a good photo if it doesn't have per pixel sharpness. I have said that it can't be an accurate camera if it doesn't have per pixel sharpness. What?
Cartier-Bresson called. He wants all his photos back.
Yeah. Okay. Okay, well, why don't you send in your X-Pro and just use your phone for everything, wise ass? Oh, right, you don't use either. Oh!
Oh, jerk.
Bang! Zoom! Zoom!
That's right. Hold on, I gotta go get a Kleenex. Bloody nose.
Enough said on that or no?
Yeah. I think we're
okay. Look, I think the Mac Pro is beautiful. I think it's going to cost a lot of money. And I think that whatever it costs, say the base one, even if it starts at $2,500, which I think it's going to start
at $2,500. Okay. I really do.
Let's say that it does for a quad core with 8 gigs of RAM and a 250 gig SSD. You're going to need external hard drives. You're going to, you know, it's going to get very expensive very quickly. Oh, I want to max out the RAM and I want to put a big SSD in there and I want to get an external promise array, whatever it is. You're at $5,000, $6,000, $7,000, $8,000 easy. Hey,
you know what's interesting? You cannot buy the current Mac Pro anymore.
Really? They stopped selling it yesterday?
It's gone from Apple's website. The only Mac Pro that's listed is the new one.
Also interesting, it's being made in the U.S. And also interesting,
it's being assembled in the U.S.
Okay. Also interesting is that the they said that it can support 4K displays, and there is apparently a resolution correct for essentially Retina, so doubling the resolution of a 27-inch iMac display in the beta of the new Mac OS.
Mm-hmm.
Which makes me think that they're probably going to use the same darn panel that Asus is using.
Or something very similar.
Right. Yeah.
Typically, they use LG
actually,
panels.
It's not quad, the 27, because that would be ridiculous. That would be.
Look, I am looking
53.
At.
I just want a 38, whatever. You're looking what?
A new Air.
You should get if you just want something to write on and edit stuff, like easily, go get the little 11-inch. Although 11, a lot of people say that the 11, the vertical pixels, because it's only like 600 or 800 or 700 pixels tall. It's mm-hmm. a little constricting. Like I went for this 13, but I gave it to Heather.
It's, you know what? It's $100 more for the 13.
I personally would go for the 13. Although
for $100. Yeah. I think with 8 gig of RAM and the 1.7 CPU upgrade.
I'll buy an iPad with a keyboard.
$1,249, I think.
Yeah. It's good. Anyway, yeah.
Kevin just got one. Kevin Knight.
Did he get the new one or the old one?
Got the new one. Yeah, he just ordered one for his wife. So he said he'll have it in a week.
I'm sure it's going to be great. Mine is a Sandy Bridge edition, and it's still doing great. No real complaints, other than the fact that I was limited to 4 gigs of RAM at the time. I think you can get 8 on them now.
Yep, you can get 8.
Anyway.
But, I don't know. Did they change it? Is it still soldered onto the board, or is it a socket now?
They're going to get more and more soldered, my friend.
Yeah.
Okay, so photographer of the week, who do we got?
Oh, this is somebody you found. I didn't know this.
Did somebody send this in? I feel like somebody told me about this person. Her name is Uta Barth. She's a German photographer. She won the MacArthur Fellow Grant in 2012.
Okay, I don't know what that is. What is that?
Oh, that's the MacArthur Foundation. It's called the Genius Grant. It's the same. Jad Abumrad won it last year too.
Oh, okay, okay, okay.
They give you $500,000.
Yeah, half a million.
Paid in quarterly installments over 5 years to just do great things with.
Hmm.
Yeah, and so you could be 18 to 82 years old. It's one of one of the most significant awards with no strings attached. So they don't make you do anything. They're just.
Do they seek you out, or do you apply for this?
That is a good question, of which I do not have an answer. My guess is that you would apply, because how would you even find these people?
Yeah.
No application. People are nominated anonymously by a body of nominators who submit recommendations to a small selection committee of about a dozen people. It's also anonymous. Kidding. So, interestingly enough, it probably is, you know the right people, so you get nominated.
Interesting.
Anyway, so she won it the same year as Jad, and I think I maybe found her on the list of the other people who won because I was looking through them. Mm-hmm. So, her thing, she seems to take what... how would you describe what she does?
It's almost impressionism.
Yeah, they're out of focus, largely out of focus sort of fields.
Yeah, and severely out of focus, not just soft, but
like
very, very out
like
of focus.
All bokeh all the time kind of thing, right? Yeah. And she actually calls them fields. And they feel like paintings to me.
Yeah, when I first looked at her, I thought of Helen Frankenthaler, who I also really, really like.
Okay.
Just big color fields. I mean, and these things, I don't know how big her prints are, but they need to be seen large to be really appreciated.
Yeah, and they're 35 by 44 inches, these big prints.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, which looks really cool. Now, I mean, she's done some diptychs where she like slides the camera over a few inches and does another one, like almost like 3D kind of. Or, feel.
Mm-hmm.
Stereograms.
What do you think of this? Is this, and this is going to be a very broad question, but is this photography?
Yes, this is photography, but I think this is, when we were talking about that Tissot painter mm-hmm. a few weeks ago, I was saying how it's interesting to see those painters of that time who were creating paintings that started to look like photographs because they hadn't thought about people going out of frame and that kind of stuff mm-hmm, before. Mm-hmm. And then they saw photographs that were sort of made and there were mistakes, quote unquote, in them. And they said, oh, that makes it look more like real life. And so they started doing those things in paintings so that the paintings were informed by photography. I think this in many ways is photography informed by painting. She has stuff that is in focus and then she does some stuff where it's inverted. And I think these are beautiful. The question
I really like this work.
The question I have with this kind of stuff, and we'll put some links in the show notes, 5by5.tv/OTP/59. The problem, if I have one with this, is that if you or I or any student in a photography class took these same pictures, would they get noticed? Or would somebody you just took some out of focus crap with your iPhone? You know,
but is that limited to her, or is that anybody who's done something first and been noticed for it?
Right. Well, was she first? Is she really the first person to take out of focus field shots?
Okay, you're right. Maybe that came out wrong. But first person to maybe garner the attention that she has for it.
Maybe. Yeah. I mean, she won a MacArthur Genius Grant. Mm-hmm. Look, people have been making this sort of overly impressionistic photography stuff for years,
Yeah.
Every high school girl with a camera makes stuff like this. Where is the, I don't know. I mean, I think
I
it's
like
beautiful.
This kind of stuff in video. You ever seen this?
Yeah, sure.
Where I love it, especially, just little atmospheric shots.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know.
Either do I.
I mean, is it interesting enough to where you look at it and you go, gosh, I want to know what's, I wonder what's going on in the frame, or do you accept it for what it is?
I personally want this accept to be it for focus. What it is.
Okay. Okay.
I think they are interesting, but I think they are interesting also to spark the conversation we've just been having,
mm-hmm.
which is at what point does a blurry snapshot become art? And I'm not saying that she doesn't take time working on these things, but if it's indistinguishable from a mistake, you see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. No, that keep going on that, because that's an interesting rabbit hole. If it's indistinguishable from a mistake,
yeah, then is it really
is it valid?
Yeah, you know, it's like if I'm walking down the street and I have my camera around my waist and I just keep hitting the shutter button by accident because it bounces against my thing and I get these weird blurry pictures of stuff down the street and they look cool. Where's the intent there, right? Or yeah. Even if there was intent, maybe I did that on purpose. Is the intention all that you need for it to go, to be elevated?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Can you have an unintentional body of work?
Yeah.
Or is an unintentional body of work
still art?
A body of work at all? Yeah. 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 Ooh, see, now and we're
it's,
in somewhere.
It's a big question with absolutely no answer. I mean, mm-hmm. we all have opinions and you would want to think that the point of all this is actually to...
Some of us have opinions. Some of us just want to know what everybody else thinks.
It's true. I don't know. I go back and forth on this. I think that this is very, very good, but in the same way, it's back to the pornography thing. Like, I'll know it when I see it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I think this is art, but I think a lot of stuff like this is crap. So who am I, you know?
So what makes this... What's that deciding factor? What is it...
I don't know.
Yeah.
It's an intangible. I mean, maybe that's a discussion for next week. Mm-hmm. But I think this is a good person to check out. We'll put some links in the show notes, or you could do some research yourselves. Her name is Uta Barth. It's UTA, first name, BARTH, last name.
Mm-hmm.
And I think she's in her 50s now. Very neat looking German lady.
Yeah. There's also a video that's in the show notes of talking to her about winning the MacArthur Award.
She's like,
or grant, I guess.
It was very good to win the MacArthur grant. I will now not have to take pictures of out of focus anymore. I can get true camera. And
wow. I, you know what? I hope she listens to the show just for this.
No, imagine all of this was just because she had a camera that the lens was like stuck at a certain focus.
And everyone lens thought it barrel was such, wouldn't turn.
Yeah, everything. Everyone thought it was such genius, and yet it was just a limitation because she couldn't afford a new camera. That would be awesome.
Yeah, you think it's some sort of great processing, but your sensor was screwed up and it just couldn't register red.
Yeah, I had that happen to me once. Like the camera somehow inverted two of the channels in the raw file. Like got corrupt. In fact, I think we talked about this. One of the first things.
Yeah, we did. You had these weird sort of 80s looking affectations
totally
on your prints. Yeah, yeah.
That's funny. anyway, Uta Barth, go check it out. Maybe we'll talk more about that next week. Anything else before we wrap up?
No.
All right, so you need to go find a link to the t-shirts and put it in the show notes too. We got to do that too.
And
we'll put it in the group too, because I think you could, people would want these. I'm wearing it now. Shut up and shoot.
I'll look and see what sizes. I'll do a count.
Okay.
And when they're gone, they're gone.
I think that's a great idea.
Okay.
Anything else?
No. Podcast at ontakingpictures.com.
Yeah, that's right.
Or 5x5.tv/OTP gets you to all of the shows. Add /59 to that to get to this show.
And
which if you're listening, you might already be there.
I'm on the Twitter at Bill Wadman, WADMAN, and you're at Jeffrey Sidoris, JeffrySadoris.
That's it.
And I think that's about it.
I think that's it.
All right. We'll see you next week.
Yep. Have a good week.
Bye. Say what you wanna say, though I know you're
this way. Say what you wanna say. I know what you will say. We'll